Hello, you're listening to Spoiler.
Build.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray! Anthony's not here to do it for me.
He isn't being there for us, guys.
Nice.
I am Richard Nicholas, and the other voices on the podcast are Jimmy Thomas
Hello.
and Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And the voice that should be there but isn't being there is Anthony, and the reason I keep saying being there is because the film this week that we're going to chat about is called Being There, and it was Abby's pick, so she will clue you in even further as to what the film we're going to be talking about is.
This week's film is Being There from 1979, directed by Hal Ashby, written by Jerzy Kosinski, starring Peter Sellers, Shirley MacLaine, and Melvin Douglas. It's about a simple, sheltered gardener becoming an unlikely trusted advisor to a powerful businessman and an insider in Washington politics.
You said sheltered gardener. That to me just conjures like a man waiting for the rain to stop. But in fact, it's extremely sheltered to the point where we don't really know why he has been kept in the same place all the same time. It's like there's a film coming out at the moment. It's currently 2016, called like the not The Room, but Room. And this could have been like a different version where like, one man goes free from the place he's been kept all his life and figures out what to do. So it's a weird film, Abby. This is what I want to ask. Why did you pick it?
I wanted to do a Hal Ashby movie. Hadn't actually seen this one before, but I've seen Harold and Maude and I liked it, and I've seen The Last Detail and I liked it, so I thought that give it a chance.
And it's kind of the last but one film Peter Sellers did before passing away.
Think that's correct, yes.
Like it was sort of, I think the idea was it was like a reprieve of he'd done a few turkeys and this was like a slightly like more successful critically, it did better, and it I believe he was even supposed to be hoping for an Oscar nom or an Oscar out of it, but I don't know, we'll see if we think it was maybe Oscar worthy. I'm going to say I didn't know what to make of the trailer. It just looked kind of odd. I wasn't sure what the tone of the comedy would be. So I was really curious, because Peter Sellers is quite funny, generally. I haven't seen that many. I've seen some of the obvious films that he's made, but not the. I don't know. I'm not a big catalogue guy. A little bit of Peter Sellers here and there. Dr. Strangelove, that's kind of the main one I know and like of his. Are you a big Peter Sellers fan, Abby?
Oh, yeah, he's all right. Like you say, not overly familiar with his work, but the stuff I have seen, I liked it.
What about you, Jimmy?
I think I'm in the same position. Like, I know him from like the Pink Panther and Doctor Strangelove, The Party, and I thought this looked interesting because I didn't really get it until I started watching it, that he plays someone who basically has no personality. And I thought after a while that was really interesting because of how much Peter Sellers was known as a character actor. So he like his final like big film that he did, he played an empty shell.
Yeah, I think I heard somewhere that he related to this idea that he's always performing. So it's kind of like he got to play himself, which is this
And
oddly
there's like,
autistic
yeah,
man who
there's
can't
like,
emote in any way.
yeah, there's nobody there. He just mimics. It is the sort of,
I'm just going to dig in, Rich. I know you're an artist about expectations.
No,
Don't
I
care.
did. We covered it. We all like all right with Peter Sellers. Don't know the whole catalogue, but appreciate him as like a comic actor.
The interesting thing about this movie is the sort of tabula rasa element of it, where he is this blank slate and other people see what they want to see in him.
That was one of the major things I was going to bring up, that like everything that happens in the film, like he is a completely passive protagonist, which is one of those things that they always tell you never to do that, never have a passive protagonist. But like the interesting thing that they do is that he's so passive, it makes things happen because people just project everything on him.
Like there's two sides to how you could understand the story, I think. And one is we've got some guy who is a gardener. He knows how to do that, and he's getting on in age. and he's got some kind of mental illness. Like, he's clearly a simpleton, but they don't confirm or tell you. They don't really give him a full backstory. He's been a gardener in this one house of a rich enough guy in New York or somewhere, and that guy passes away, and the maid informs, like, Peter Sellers' character, who is called
Chance,
Mr. Chance or whatever.
Chance the gardener.
Yeah. And basically she informs him that the old man, as they refer to him, has died and is, you know, I don't know why, but she seems shocked that he reacts kind of autistically and without caring. And it's like, wait, you know this guy. You work in the same house. You should be expecting him to just watch TV and not understand properly.
I kind of assumed that she always assumed that it would be the one thing he would react to.
Well, yeah, and like, he didn't. Death should at least, like, emotionally get to you.
And then she kind of thought, well, I guess not. Bye.
Like, yeah. I have some qualms around the setup, but I wanted to spell out the concept because it is key to the whole thing. So, one is you take it as just simple gardener bloke goes out and gets into all these weird situations and meets people. They all project, and because he's quite eloquent and is dressed smartly and says simple things, people can talk to him, and it comes across like. Maybe he's quite clever and he's just aloof, you know?
Yeah.
But the other way to read it is it's not a comedy about a misunderstood man, but it's a satire about how the rich and powerful are full of, like, you can be really empty and be a nothing of a personality and be this vacant nobody and still get to the high echelons of power. Basically, you know,
just agreeing with everyone.
Everyone, as long as you like agreeable, you can go far. As long as you don't have your own opinions getting in the way.
Yep.
So there's the satire that's potentially there, or you know, for me, a slightly off comedy about a guy who has a mental illness.
I think it's both, and I think both versions of it are presented. This is one of probably the most subtle films I've ever watched, because a lot of it was. Like, me not reading what was going on until a scene was over, and then going, oh, because, okay. And then, like, and that's why I throw a criticism in off the bat. Like, I did like this. I didn't have a lot of problems with it, really, that, like, of any real substance. But I did think that it was a little bit too long, maybe it felt long because of the pacing, because it is very slow. But I also never really got bored because things kept getting stranger. And, like, his story kept getting bigger and bigger in ways that I was like, what? I think,
yeah, it's about like, kind of blowing your mind with how much can happen to a man without it ever being twigged that he's got this problem.
Yeah, and it just escalates so much. And you keep thinking someone's going to figure it out, that they're just going to go, oh, he's just a bit retarded, but like they never, like the doctor does kind of,
and then he seems cool with it because he's known him long enough to be like, well, he's an all right guy, I think I can allow a simpleton to get on with life.
Yeah, and it's interesting that in all that he never develops. And well, actually, I do think it's nice as well, not to jump way ahead, but like when the other old man who then takes him in dies, he does actually have tears in his eyes. So it's like he finally starts to have some kind of emotional response.
That's true. I think it was there to say, at least with the rich people who have been putting up with him and liking him, and they've befriended him because they just project onto him whatever they want. I think they were saying he had a relationship here, whereas the old man that he lived in the house of, we don't know, but maybe that there wasn't a personal connection there. This rich guy, you know, the original owner of him. I mean, we don't even know.
I know.
Let's call him Guardian.
His guardian, basically, you know, didn't even have him in the will or any information that legally meant. It's like some rich guy found out that some child was good at gardening and a simpleton and just kidnapped them and put them to work. Like, there's it doesn't make sense, and there is no paperwork.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like that the film addresses that as well and has people, like, investigating him and just finding nothing.
But it doesn't make sense. There would be something. Even the maid would might... Like, why doesn't the maid know why he lives there? Like, I just...
Well, she might know, but nobody's asked her.
I suppose.
Yeah, nobody has, nobody ever asks her.
Well, this, like, this is the early scene that's kind of interesting, is we have the two lawyers who come to deal with the estate. And like I said, he's not in the will, and he's not referenced as working there. He's he's just this odd kidnapped guy.
He's just
contently living his life.
Yeah.
Gardening and watching TV, like no, not properly watching TV, watching it in a kind of, I watch whatever's on, mimic it a bit, get bored, switch channels.
I want to do a quick side note there. When he's showing the lawyers around the place, the way he stands next to that car, because he's seen other people stand next to cars.
Yeah.
Was one of my favourite little motifs.
This is the thing with Peter Sellers, is you forget at times it's a comedy because it's played so weirdly, but there's quite a lot of humour there. It's just whether you pick up on it or find it fun. Like, you might just find it stupid, but actually there's so many little, just conversational nuggets that are funny.
And it's all like little ticks he does and physical movements and things.
Mm. Sounds like there's someone screaming in the background there, Jimmy.
Yes.
Let's just, if any listeners hear dogs barking or children screaming, it's because we live interesting lives with people
noise. Children screaming as in, like, laughing and playing video games. It's not, you know...
We're not torturing anyone.
Yes. Sorry, Jamie.
Happy dogs and children, like, in our backgrounds.
That is...
Just, we're going to ignore them,
going
that's all.
Mental at the TV because he's playing video games.
Yeah.
Much like I do.
Yes.
When I play video games.
Back to our pretentious chat about a film.
Yes.
Jamie.
It's so subtle, it's almost as if he was doing it to see if anyone even noticed.
Yeah.
Like, he was just, like, they filmed them and he did it. If I wonder if I'll keep that in.
It almost would be funnier if he was doing it as a wind-up.
Yeah.
Like, if he just decided... Because it's the lawyers thought he was a bit odd when they were looking around the house. And he was talking like someone who was clearly a bit simple, but also, you know, making sense. And having an odd way of explaining everything, but...
It was great that their immediate assumption was that he was doing something dodgy or was, like, hiding something, and he just had no idea that they were even getting that from him.
Yeah, I think it would have been funny if they'd implied he had something wrong, and he was offended, but then kept the pretense up. Like, I think it would have been funny to have a concept where Peter Sellers was having everyone on, but was surprised at how far he could live his life neutrally without emotion. I don't know. But this is the thing, is the lawyers establish that he is not going to make any claims to live there, and they basically tell him he can leave, and then he takes them literally all the time.
Yeah.
And basically he just figures, oh, I guess I have to leave, and he leaves, you know, and walks off into the rest of the city, having never left. And that's kind of the bizarre Mr. Magoo story of it, where it's just this blind... Well, he's not blind, but it's kind of that man wanders through problems and doesn't realise thing.
And it didn't, like, that's the thing. Like, halfway through the film, I went, oh, his name's Chance. Like, I didn't even, because I was so fascinated by what was happening. I didn't even think about, like, what his name is. Because, he just happens along everything.
That's true.
And just kind of blindly wanders into situations and ends up living in a mansion and doesn't even understand that he's, like, there. He doesn't even know what the elevator is.
Well, okay, I want to address a problem I have that gets in the way of the enjoyment of the comedy and some of the more satirical observations about society. And it's... I feel sad because there are people who have sort of simple lives and have mental illnesses or different versions of autism or whatever that live a life similar to this. They can't connect with people. They don't connect emotionally and they're limited. They can do stuff. They live happy lives often, but they have this problem in their life. And I don't find it funny to have it be, oh, look, that they think he's normal, but he's not. Oh, they think he's a businessman, but he's a simple gardener. Oh,
yes.
she thinks she's going to have sex with him, and he doesn't even know how to do that.
Yeah, but he's never actually... I think the way it escapes anything like that... And you also keep in mind, this was made in 1979.
Mm.
But not only that, they never say he has anything.
They're not putting anyone who has a mental illness, they're not saying it, postcarding it and saying this is how people with autism are. It just is representing someone who is either mentally ill or, as it implies at the end, Jesus. But we'll come to that. I don't feel comfortable. I don't mind having a character who has these problems, but the joke is usually on people, you know, misunderstanding him. So they're the butt of the joke. But yeah. It feels sad all the time. Because it feels sad for him because he isn't living a full life. But he's happy, we think, but he's wrong.
That's not the point, though. That it's not a wacky comedy. It is a drama as well. Without doing anything too brutal, it is a very dark comedy because he is a very sad character. Because especially towards the end when he watches someone die again and he asks, "Do I have to leave now?" Because that's what happened before. And it's he still doesn't get it. He doesn't even know good things are happening to him. He just enjoys them in the moment and then wanders off. And
But I find that as a profoundly sad... You're not connecting with the world, really.
Well, yeah, that's the point of the film. It worked on you, because I did as well.
I wanted to laugh more, but I just felt I kept just thinking about, gosh, how would I deal with, I had a son or a friend who had this problem... It would never be funny for them. It would just every time someone thinks they're a straightforward, normal person, and I know actually you think they're responding to you, or you think the saddest things are where people are befriending him, but he's not even trying to. And it's that weird thing with people who have various mental issues like this. It's saddening to think they're not really connecting. And that bums me out, the whole film, because it's kind of about that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a downer film, but it's not necessarily the kind of film you'd watch to cheer yourself. It's not that kind of comedy.
Mm.
It does make you think, oh, that's, bits of it are funny, his little physical tics and stuff, and that sometimes how much the situations escalate. But then when it gets to the end and you think about, what his life is like and that he never changes... And then the ending where they're talking about having him run for president because of how popular he's become. Yeah. And at first you think, oh, that's you know, he made it all the way up to president. And and then you think, oh, actually, that's just people using him right up to the very top.
Or you could take it as, any moron can be the president. And it's kind of a big slam on all the presidents. It's you don't have to be a person. You just have to be a face.
That is definitely there. But what I was looking at more at that point was that they're still using him, and everyone will always project on him and use him, and it's almost good for him that he doesn't even realize. But yeah, it is bleak.
Well, Abby, what do you make? I mean, I'm not saying they cross a line and it's un-PC. It's perfectly politically correct. I just find myself being bummed when I should be. Enjoying the oddness of the comedy. What do you feel? Do you think the character is good or bad or what?
Well, I think I've looked at it sort of from the other side to you, where he's the protagonist, but I think it's about other people, not him.
Yeah, I agree.
And that it's a commentary on how people are fundamentally self-interested and that it doesn't matter what you are. People will see you for whatever they want you to be.
Yeah, because at no point does it say, oh, isn't it funny when people are stupid and simple? It's saying everyone else who can't figure out what's up with someone. All the self-interested people are funny. They're ridiculous and they get themselves into trouble or they do stuff because they haven't thought about, what is actually going on, and they've been in their own head, their own bubble, And then it's about a comedy about making fun of these people. I get that. So you think the focus should always be on what is happening, the situations and how they unfold and how funny it is that people are, if anything, stupider than he is, because he's doing everything, he's answering people's questions perfectly fine and behaving polite and nice, and everyone else is dumb.
Mm. Something like that, yeah.
Okay, well, to skip over the bulk of the film a moment, I think the other interesting part to talk about in regard to what we're saying is the end. Because one of the make-or-break moments, I think, other than the start, which I find a little implausible, there'd be no paperwork about this guy, and they basically, make him up and he doesn't make sense, right? So, is the end, as Jamie's referenced, he is in a position where he's being talked about by politically powerful people who could potentially put a presidential candidate forward and get them elected and make a president. The men who can make a president in America are saying, we like this guy, we could use him as our kind of puppet and put him in place, and it could work better than the current guy who's giving a speech, you know, during this funeral that we're all horribly chatting during. Now, and meanwhile, Mr. Chance has wandered off, got bored, and has started doing a bit of park tending, you know. And it's that's interesting. I don't want to talk about that. What I want to talk about is then he walks on water, and the film just he just watches him wander onto a lake. He just sort of plunges his umbrella down to show that, oh, he's not just walking across lake. He is actually, you know, he is on the water, somehow making an allusion to Jesus. They are saying, this guy's like Jesus.
I think I think the director said, I think it was somewhere I was reading the trivia, that the director himself said he's not actually walking on water at that point. He just, like everything else in his life, he stepped out into the lake without thinking about it and was lucky to still be on, like, the shallow part. And that's why he sticks his umbrella in, because he sees that he's on the water. And again, he, like, misses the bit he's standing on. And it just looks like he's walking on water. But he wanted to give the idea that... he wanted to have that reaction that you had of, like, hang on, he's what? He's Jesus.
Yeah, I think one of the contentious points about it is, oh, is he walking on, like, a hidden bridge, or is he Jesus? And it's like, well, you don't see a bridge, so he is walking on water.
Well, I think that's what the intent was, that, like, we've seen how people, like, project on him all through the film, and then we're given a scenario where we're not given an answer to, like, because everything he says to people, like, they start reading this, like, cryptic symbolism into it, and he's just talking about gardening.
Mm. Mm.
So, like, he walks out onto that water, and the director has said, yeah, there's a simple explanation. He's still on the shallow bit. Like, there's a bit that juts out, and he happened to walk on it.
Well, that's how they obviously filmed it to do that.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, we don't know that. So we suddenly see him walking on water, and we project the idea.
This is where I disagree. Well, I wasn't projecting, oh, he's Jesus. That is actually signposting us to say, this is, you know, there's not many... there's not many other scenarios where, like, other stories about people who walk on water. Jesus is, like, a world-famous religious figure known everywhere, and it's just a known thing. Jesus did miracles, or, you know, is claimed to have done miracles, blah, blah, blah. Whatever you feel about religion, you know that Jesus did miracles. One of them was walking on water. That is a cultural, like, point that lots of people know. That's not me doing a bit of reading. It's saying, like Jesus, he's walking on water at the end of the film.
I know, but what I'm saying is that the simple things he said, without even thinking about what he was saying, made people think of other things and go off on tangents.
And it could be symbolic in the sense of that's what they think of him now.
Yeah, the fact that he walked on water, that puts Jesus in your head the same way the things he says to people make them think of other things.
Well, in a way, in the last moment, it kind of goes, if you think about it, wasn't Mr. Chance like Jesus? Maybe Jesus was a simpleton who gave simple answers and advice, and everyone took it literally and went crazy with it, right? Isn't it just like the story of Jesus, a simple man with a simple message? And really, that's insulting to people who think Jesus is the Son of God. I personally am not bothered about making that statement, but it's not... It doesn't make sense to say, isn't he like Jesus? No, he wasn't like Jesus. He was actually a simpleton. What are you on about? You know?
No, I think that is a visual representation of what they are perceiving him as. So far, he's during the film, he becomes what people think he is just because of circumstances.
It's not that, yeah, they're not saying he as a person is like Jesus. It's saying that people have latched onto him in the same way they do to people like that. Like, Jesus was, you know, historically probably like a Gandhi-type guy who, like, wandered around saying cool things, and then the Romans killed him because they didn't, like the kind of following he was getting.
Maybe
and then
maybe in the sequel, when Mr. Chance becomes president, he does get assassinated for his simplistic garden metaphors.
But in the same way that they take, you know, a guy from a couple of thousand years ago who said some stuff that no one else was really saying at the time, and then when he died, you know, he was a martyr, and then people turned him into this, like, you know, symbol of faith.
Mm.
That's what is happening to Chance. Like, he's this blank slate who's just lucked into situations, and people have projected their own, like, ideas and morals, and it comes to a head when, like, a political party has taken the things he said that he doesn't even know they're looking at them that way, and has built him up into this figure. Like, the entire US has at that point. He's on TV. They're asking him to write books, and he even tells people, "I can't read or write." And they're like, I know what you mean. Who has time, right? And
he's like, yeah, I get
it. Yes. And the walking on water thing isn't saying he is like, oh, he's the second coming. It's saying people now look at him the same way and for the same reasons. They've projected what they want onto him.
Yeah, like, because people become, do use religion as a tool to get what they want politically and money-wise.
Yeah, and it's another good point as well in that, like, a lot of like, very, very religious people, it tends to be the people who are more, like, violently and aggressively religious, warp the message of, I'm only going to use Christianity as an example, because I'm not...
Well, it's like, the one they use as well.
Yeah, and they often take, like, the good messages, but use them for, like, to justify doing bad stuff,
right.
And it's the same thing with Chance in this film. Like, they take the things he says and just make up other things from it.
Okay, that's, I agree with you. Here is a qualm. It is a bit insulting. It's perfectly fine. Well within any filmmaker's rights to have a pop at religion. But it is essentially going, the main figurehead of Christianity was a simpleton, and you've all blown it out of... Like, I think it's a tongue-in-cheek insult, along with being a clever message as well.
I don't think it's comparing him as a person with Jesus. I think it's comparing the way people have elevated him with the way they did it to someone like Jesus, or anyone else like that. Because it happened to Mother Teresa, you know... Anyone who gets, like, idolized or canonized
or
like that...
Or even quoted, you know.
Yeah. And I think this, okay, you know, it's the same thing with Chance, but, like, he has no substance. They've just put it on him.
Okay, so here's my other problem. I thought filmically it was a bit crappy to do that, because the film ends fairly abruptly. We get to this interesting point where Chance could potentially be put into the... could be made a candidate. They suggest, basically, they could walk him through the process of being a president and, you know... It's good because it's a comedy. It's meant to be a light-hearted comedy drama, but if the film went on, at some point this would fall apart. Like, it's been incredible so far, but believable that he could get into this situation. However, it defies plausibility that this man could genuinely be elected the president without anyone finding out. I'm thinking of George Bush and thinking I may have spoke too soon.
But... I was going to say, it's one of those films that you can't really say it's beyond plausibility, because if you're going to be realistic about it, the second he'd walked out of that house, he would have been mugged and murdered.
Well, he nearly was mugged. It was a good scene, and we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is I wanted... I think we could have got something where he was outed. It was probably the best. It was probably the best not to get to the point where... Because everyone in the film would be betrayed and hurt and hate him, even though it's not his fault. They would feel like idiots. And
that would have been a much darker film.
Yeah. So I get they avoid it, but I thought it was so cheap to avoid it, have the movie end before any of the repercussions of basically everyone misunderstanding him, and then to just go, oh, he's a bit like Jesus. And that's that. Like, they present you with a surreal image that's obviously referencing it.
I do kind of agree with you that the walking on water thing, I liked it, but it was very abrupt.
Mm.
And then the film just stopped. But also, at that point, the film was like 2.5 hours long. It had to end somewhere.
It did. But, I mean, maybe there should be a sequel where he becomes... We see him become president. Every time he gives a speech... they love him, but he only ever says simple things. No one, they maybe the White House or the, his, like, maybe the people who've put him there realise, oh my gosh, he's actually, you know, simple. And then they have to go with it, so they never let him speak.
You know what, the thing is, the extent to which it all happened, if it actually came out that he was just, like mentally challenged, everyone would just deny it and be like, yeah, no, he's not. He's genius.
They'd
he's
spin a, it, he's politically yeah. spin it. And he would get elected, and then, okay, so let's say in the sequel, being there too, been there, done that, he is president, and we do a whole comedy about the president getting all his powers, and basically, it could become Doctor Strangelove, where they kind of end the world with a simple man being interpreted wrong. So maybe yeah. they did do okay. That's my qualm. Is I thought it was a bit cheap, and this is my final point about why I didn't like the ending. We set up that the woman that we haven't talked about much, but the woman who takes him in to her home. She's a millionaire. Oh, well, you know, she's... What is the relationship with that woman and the rich guy?
Well, they're husband and wife.
Right, because sometimes it seems like...
Well, he's much older, and he's been ill for a really long time, and right. they know he's dying. And he sees the relationship developing between her and Chance, you know, which is a whole other thing. But he wants his wife to be taken care of when he's gone, and he knows she's got a long time left. And he's probably known that he's always been too old for her and that this would happen, and he's happy to let them be together once he goes, because he wants right. he likes him and he wants her to be taken care of.
Okay, so that I was a bit unclear, because at one point I was like, are they married? Are they husband and daughter? I don't know if I paid enough attention.
They're a married couple, and it is a bit strange. The film does go in a more... graphically sexual direction that I was expecting.
Yeah, like, it's a bit more like a carry-on film.
And I'm not a prude or anything, but I did get uncomfortable then just because I wasn't expecting it. I was like, hang on.
You weren't expecting a woman masturbating on a bear rug while a man does
handstands. And it was funny just because it was so, like, what? That's, I didn't see that coming at all. But like,
And I think because he is so blank, they have to do particularly extreme situations. So you know he's not reacting to them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to question that scene because I thought it was a bit rubbish. Like, I thought it was a bit unplausible. Like, I thought a lot of the time it justified everything that happened. You go, that's unlikely. You've explained it away and it's funny and that's okay. That was the fact that she could continue having an affair with him based on him not kissing her a lot, then kissing a lot because he'd seen it on TV, then stopping and doing nothing, and then she basically is off hiding coquettishly behind a bedpost. I was like, no.
I did.
Are you
crazy? I liked her initial performance where she was really awkwardly trying to be sexy.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was quite realistic.
And she takes, every time he doesn't react, it is like, no, you're right. We shouldn't do this. And that was funny, but it got a little bit too far in terms of not, I don't mind the tabooness, that's fine. I don't mind a woman masturbating on a bear rug. Why not? But I didn't thought the comedy was a bit, oh god.
It was just like a lot of the scenes in the film, it was strange, and I wasn't expecting the film to get that, like, not that it was necessarily a family film, but I wasn't expecting it to get suddenly quite that adult.
Yeah.
But it does make sense to me as part of the story, because then she goes on to the whole thing about how she says how he sets her like free inside herself, and that's never happened before. And it comes back to the idea of him just being a blank slate for people to project everything, because that's what he does for everyone.
Yes, but this is where I start to be a bit annoyed with the film, because he starts a genuine relationship eventually with her making assumptions. At first it's funny, she's an idiot, she hasn't twigged, he's simple, but okay, benefit of the doubt, nothing has happened to confirm he's simple. But they all build reasonable, happy, friendly relationships. But she has gone to the point where she's sexually throwing herself at him, has practically had sex with him, but doesn't know he doesn't care about her in any... Like, he doesn't emotionally connect with her. He's just, you know, got this weird thing. And he's a simpleton, right? But she's supposed to be a fairly sympathetic character, right? But but she's still an idiot because she didn't twig. Like, the doctor's the only one who twigs. I feel like they portrayed her as sometimes sympathetic and other times like a complete fool.
I would say she's not an idiot necessarily, but she is very rich and therefore very sheltered and emotionally caged in. So once she's had this opportunity, she's found someone who like unleashes her. She can't stop just like going for it because she's been so uptight and like.
Yeah, we also don't know how long that her husband's been ill for, and even maybe before that, he couldn't really do anything for her.
And he might have been a fairly, you know, standoffish guy. I mean, I'm fine with the relationship developing how it did, but at some point when he's president, she is going to twig. He has never emotionally connected or made.
Yeah, but
he's like this simple man who doesn't connect with people, she's going to be super. You would give you your own mental illness to think that you went that far with someone who didn't even know you were in the room.
Well, no, he does connect with her though, because when the old man dies and he actually does cry a little bit, he says without any like input, it's one of the few things he says in the film that he's not parroting back, that he loves her, and it's one of the first and only like genuine statements he makes that isn't prompted first.
Okay, well you've argued with me plenty. I'm not sure I totally accepted it. I'm not sure I totally buy that. I thought it was a little bit mean-spirited to have her be basically look a fool, even though she's meant to be likable. And you know, and everyone starts off being an idiot and ends up being a genuine friend, but they'll realize they're all idiots eventually. Apart from that, you know, the guy dies. He went to his grave not knowing. But just to me, the sequel being there too is going to have this horrible thing where everyone in the first film goes, I feel so wrong. I'm such a fool. How did I not know?
You could make a much darker comedy as a sequel where it's everyone realizing that he's actually just an idiot and they all like rush him out and he still doesn't know. But that would also be much sadder than the actual film.
Well, what should have happened after he walked on water is that someone found him in the park, and eventually someone went, actually, this guy, he's actually mentally ill and doesn't know what's going on all the time. And, oh my gosh, everyone who's been connected with him is basically like an idiot who'd never questioned anything about him. Like, well, actually, that's not true. People did question things, but they found nothing because they had the wrong name mistaken. They mistook his name early on. And I don't know, part of me can't enjoy the comedy because I go, no, at some point this is going to be really sad for everyone.
I'm pretty sure we've had this problem with films before with you, that you're looking at it too realistically.
It's meant to be a light-hearted, messagey comedy.
Yeah, it embraces the idea of fiction and it just runs with the concept.
Let me say, I did like it generally. I just wanted to put up a fight. Beginning and end, I had some problems. The meat of it, very entertaining.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
Scenes I liked. I loved the fact when he walks into New York for the first time. They have this kind of weird song. Sorry, go on.
It's Washington.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Why did I just assume? I don't know. I haven't been to New York or Washington, so forgive me.
Neither have I.
Well, there we are. He walks into the city. I mean, it makes sense, though, because all the politicians, yeah.
Yeah.
He walks into the city anyway, and he's wandering around, and we have some weird music playing, and it's all kind of interesting and funny.
Sorry, I'd forgotten. You just reminded me. I wanted to mention that music, that disco remix of Thus Spake Zarathustra from 2001. I thought that was brilliant. When he like stepped out onto the steps and it did the whole like fanfare and then turned to disco and I was like, I love this.
Abby, did you think they were having a weird Ric Flair moment? Because that's his thing.
There was a sort of tipping point in that bit where I thought maybe he was just going to keep going and sort of end. You know how Forrest Gump ended up running across America?
Yeah.
So I thought something like that might happen where he just go, I'll go out and I'll keep going.
I was a bit surprised because I think I was in the same situation as you at that point. I thought it was going to be like him just wandering from situation to situation and his like adventures as a simpleton. And I was quite surprised when it actually turned into like a single ongoing story.
It focused well. It really, like, because essentially we have a little bit of that. Like the funniest bit in that bit is like he asks some he asks a woman initially, like, I'm hungry, can I have some dinner, please?
Yeah.
and then he's like, she freaks out and runs away, and and then he comes across some street youths, or youths, or whatever, and he just asks them something normal about what, like, if they've got a garden or something, because he wants to work in a garden, and they, they assume
Raphael send you?
Yeah, they make a few assumptions, and it's really, like, this wonderful back and forth that Peter Sellers is standing there like a vacant robot, and then like toughing up and being like, "Oh yeah, have you as Raphael sent you and sending threats and calling him a honky and sending him packing with a flick knife," and he just like tries to turn them off with a remote.
Yeah,
that was really good. And then I love the. I mean, the very end of the film, he's visiting he's getting a doctor's appointment because he's been injured, and the doctor's black, so of course he goes, "Oh, maybe you will know who Raphael is. Are you Raphael? I have the message for you."
I thought that was a really nice, demonstration that it's not that he's racist, but he's never been outside, he just assumed that they knew each other.
Yeah.
That's the thing, he'll have no concept of how many people live in a city.
Yeah!
He thinks the number of people who live there are the number of people he's seen.
Yeah. And it is funny. It's going to happen, and when it does, you're like, oh, that's good. And then what I thought was interesting, because it ties into this bit, is that after the end of the profound, is he like our Lord and Saviour Jesus, they have it go to credits, but they also play the outtake where they'd played... It was Peter Sellers trying to do the scene where he gives the whole message from a hospital bed to the black doctor about what... You know, the exact words that the youth gang said to him.
Peter Sellers begged them to take out the outtake at the end, specifically because they were submitting it to the Cannes Film Festival, and the general consensus is that he didn't get a few awards because of the outtakes at the end.
Yeah, because he felt it took away from the actual, performance... It kind of pulled the veil away.
It was a little bit, ooh, is this Peter Sellers' Rain Man? But actually, I think it didn't... Peter Sellers might not have deserved massive nominations and acclaim because he was essentially just doing, quite vacant... he was doing emotionless acting. Surely you should get awards for such variety. He had subtlety,
I imagine doing something like that consistently for a whole film and enough that people will, buy it when they watch it. Is harder than just acting, as a fully emotional person.
I guess he has to mimic that special brand of simple artisticness. There is a subtlety to it, definitely.
Yeah, it's like when people who, Tom Waits in his music. There's songs where he plays piano badly, but he plays it in such a way that you have to know how to play it really well in order to play it that badly.
Sure,
because you have to know what the wrong notes are and what the wrong order is.
Okay, so maybe he would have got an Oscar.
I'm okay with the outtakes at the end, except I think it was a little bit of a cheap move to have a better ending than the ending they had.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought. I thought, we've left people with something a bit ambiguous here. Let's show Peter Sellers having a laugh.
Yeah, it totally... You have that... You're just getting to grips with, what are they saying? Because basically, your thought process is, they're alluding him to being Jesus. And then I went, hang on, I like what you're saying.
Yeah,
interesting concept. I've thought about it a bit. No, doesn't make sense. You didn't set that up as a concept. I have problems. But other people might go, yes. They'll come to the conclusions of, like how people misuse the word of Jesus and stuff. And, you can't think about that, because it is so funny watching Peter Sellers trying to, corpsing, but by laughing when he should be not emoting and saying all these funny, terms.
Yeah, I liked that outtake just because I like outtakes like that. Especially when it's something quite serious.
And it's such a long speech, and he can't do it, and it's the funniest outtake I've seen.
But
and it's good that we get to see it, but it does change.
Yeah, I would prefer to see it, find it on YouTube than have it at the end. And it doesn't. It's not even that it plays after a while; it just starts immediately.
Yeah, it could have been after the credits, perhaps.
Yeah, I think. After the credits, I think would have been better. I don't think
they didn't have DVD extras in the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my thing, is that I feel like it was a sleight of hand to have a better ending than they had.
It felt like it was flat and sudden, and they wanted something in there. And yeah, he did. He begged them to leave it out, and he was really angry when they didn't. There were showings of it, or there are prints of it where it is taken out as well, though.
Yeah, but you'd have to see it the first time without that. Yeah. You can't. No, having seen it, I'm happy to watch it now because I've thought about the film, and it'll be taking away different things. I don't know. I can see either point of view. But that was just that. I thought we'd cover that because it's a really interesting point. And that was just off the back of the example of it was funny when the whole Mr. Magoo stuff is happening in the streets of New York. But like you said, Jamie, its bulk is set up by he's getting hungry and is lost in the middle of nowhere. He's found a wall of TVs in a shop and is trying to figure out why he can see himself on them. And he's looking in a TV shop window with a camcorder. And it just so happens a limousine, as he steps into the street, like reverses and like hits his leg. And from that point on, that's when we get the main story kicking off. He's pulled into the limo. The woman asks, the woman whose limousine it is says he can sit down. And she's slightly worried about him, but also probably worried that she's going to get sued for...
Yeah, that's what I thought initially as well.
And then because of certain, like just being offered a drink at the wrong time or him answering things literally... That's when the subtle comedy of the misunderstanding him, seeing depth in his simple answers, and misinterpreting his interactions, leads him into living with millionaires who are like with a dying businessman in the house, and just a visit from the president.
Yeah,
And then all that takes is that's all that really happens is he gets injured, comes to a house, and they. From then on, it is just a long sequence of insane things.
Whereas people with all these like ideas in their heads, but no one has ever allowed them to like flesh them out. And he does because he doesn't say anything back that is like, it's all just basic stuff. And they're like, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, sure. And it just, and I like the way everybody does that. Like almost everyone he meets except the doctor who just looks at him thinking, this guy's up.
But I like that, can't twig either because it's just sensible enough a reaction from him.
I think, and what I did like as well is when the old man dies, the doctor calls him Chance, so he's found out who he is and that he's not like he is just like kind of simple. And I thought, this is going to end on a downer. Like the doctor's going to out him, and he didn't. And I thought, that's quite nice.
I think it's because. There would be no value to him outing him because he isn't a fraud. He called him Chance, and the way he reacted told him, it's like, well, you're not pretending to be someone else. He's almost like he didn't notice. Just,
everyone's pretending you are.
Yeah, because he twigs he's a simpleton, not a con man. So, and anyway, although he's getting paid, he should probably out him so that everyone else has a mental breakdown and he's got loads of work. Because the revelation that this is just a simpleton... would ruin so many people's... Like, the president is like has quoted him and made... Like, basically, initially it's just a rich couple who aren't listening or picking up on the subtle signs that, Mr. Chance is not a businessman. Yeah. They've projected, because they're business people, he is. And because it was initially just two idiots and, the staff... Like, the elevator guy has some nice scenes because, Peter Sellers' character goes in, sits there, and goes, this is a very small room. And then the operator's like, it is.
How long do we have to stay in here?
He just, he says things that a normal, distressed person might say, but because he says them calmly, they come off as, like, wry humour. And you'd understand everyone being like, we didn't twig because he didn't say much. But... Once the president happened to be coming, that's when the stakes are, like, changed, because it's a big deal now, because the president has met him, not twigged he's a simpleton, then, used his words of metaphor, took his garden, literal chat about gardens, to be a metaphor for economics, and everyone starts saying how he's some kind of massive business advisor. And some of the interesting comedy, I guess, is about... The FBI, the CIA, the president's people can't find out any information to research.
Yeah,
And at first it's just, is he in the CIA, is he in the FBI?
Yeah, I like that idea that he was some kind of like ex-special services.
So that, and then they all, everyone starts telling stories to explain it because they don't get why.
Yeah,
and that is the key to how it keeps getting more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, because they turn him into a myth.
Yeah, they've established their own explanations, and then those become facts.
Yeah,
it's very clever.
It is. It is a really intelligent film. I think I would say what hurts it in some ways is the pacing is very slow, and I couldn't figure out if it was. I mean, it probably was deliberate. They felt no need to, you know, pick it up at any point. But I think that would put people off. Because even there were times when I was like, I can see where this is going now. Please hurry up a little bit and get there.
There is an argument to be made that it could have been a bit quicker and shorter. Because the longer it goes on, the more conspicuous it is that the shit hasn't hit the fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it does. The length of it, I think, is what makes, like, some people start, like, Rich, you know, this is just getting really implausible now. And like, and that's why I said, like, the very start of it is implausible when he walks out and survives for 10 minutes in the street. Mm. But because the film has only just started, it's funny and you buy it. But if you're still sitting there and you are getting to that point where you're like, well, this is getting a bit silly, and then it keeps going, it can lose you.
Well, I think they switch up to tension. Sometimes it's laughs. And then, like, for example, he's about to leave the house because all he ever wants to do is watch TV, garden. So he pops out the house just, like, to maybe investigate some more. And, like, they start asking him if he wants a car to take him somewhere, and he thinks, obviously, literally, I have a car, that'd be great. I've never been in one until like yesterday, and then it's just that, like, we're all on the edge of our seats because is he going to finally give something away? Are the limo drivers going to catch on that he's an idiot? And then he's ushered back in, and it's just like, oh well, that's a bit mean. Surely someone, like, they've had this car brought here, and he hasn't explained why he doesn't want it, and now is he going out? Like, it leaves it in these awkward, tense moments where. Is this going to be the thing that the catalyst that sets everything, like the dominoes off, you know? And it never happens because, you know, the movie keeps going with this concept. It establishes we're always going to get him in a situation that could come to the surface that he's an idiot, but actually, no, we're going to keep going, you know?
Well, I think because of that and the raising the tension, the length and the pacing of it potentially hurts it. And I also think there are times when it's almost a little bit too subtle, like the film is playing the cards too close to its chest.
Mm.
And it's not, I don't know. Like,
I felt it was being too, like, because they're all laughable fools initially. And then by the end, the millionaire, even though he's a bit arrogant and full of hot air about the greater good, and you kind of think, oh, this guy's a hypocrite and an idiot who thinks he's doing, like, he thinks he's, you know, Mr. Big Bucks, Mr. Shiny Shoes, who knows what's best for the country, and you think this guy's a tool, and then by the end you go, oh, he genuinely likes Mr. Chance, but they don't, they're in love with a lie, and that's kind of what's awkward.
But that is the point though.
But they emotionally are attached to Peter Serrell's his character. It never comes that they're going to find out because the film ends before anyone does.
I think, to me, the implication of the ending is they never will.
Yes, but we all have to live in suspended, like, disbelief.
It's a cliffhanger. Always leave them wanting more.
Yeah, well, I do. Abby, let's hear from you some more. What other scenes stand out as, like, kind of key moments you enjoyed or maybe didn't like throughout the midsection of where they actually are in the mansion? It's a huge mansion as well. It's like a massive place.
Yeah.
I think the weird joke where he's near a stairwell and this guy starts sort of coming on to him a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like to watch. And then he ran off to get his boyfriend.
And I don't know, is that a joke purely for the joke, or is this satire of the kind of people who go to these parties?
I think that one was just for the sake of a joke. Like, I imagine.
The party was, let's make fun of these, like, it was a hobnobby rich people's party, and it was, like, poke fun at the, because that is the key place where everyone projects what they want onto you, and isn't, they're all selfishly talking and not listening. And it's funny, like, you have the misunderstanding about the guy thinking he's, like... Because he's weird, he thinks he's gay. Like, and they have, like, a Russian guy who's having a chat, and he's like, I know you. Are you interested in this kind of, like, Russian... I don't know if it's a Russian writer. I think that might be a reference to the book this is based on as well.
I don't know.
I don't know the reference, but I got a sense that it was referencing the actual novel or whatever that this story was influenced by or whatever. Mm. I don't know. But it was funny how this like guy starts speaking Russian and he's like, ah, yeah. And we're all we're enjoying the fact that we know his head is empty. So, you know, it's an interesting scene you've selected, Abby. There are lots of moments where... And that's where I think it's good. It's like, that's funny. I like that.
And I do think, and I think I agree with you on this, that my favourite moments are all, like, the little ones. Mm. Like, where the doctor checks his leg and he's watching TV and he says, oh, try to keep the weight off that leg. So he just raises it like a flamingo.
Flamingo, yeah.
And just stays there.
Yeah. I, some of the more contrived stuff are, like, when... Because he mimics the TV, we established that he just copies it in a sort of... Just, that's how he interacts, as he copies the TV a little bit. And that then, like, those are a little contrived when he, you know, sees something on TV, like, particularly in the scene where he starts making out with the woman. Like, it's like, because you saw it on TV, I mean, how does this even work? You're spinning around, kissing her, then you stop because the program changed.
Yeah. Well, he did it on the phone as well, to that guy trying to interview him for a magazine, and then he ended up just not speaking to him because he was copying the yoga.
He did, like, aerobics and yoga a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
But then they do... Again, that's a nice joke. The press are onto him, and they can't get anything... It's like getting blood from a stone to get him to say anything. Like a politician...
And they just think he's secretive and aloof, but he's just... He got distracted by the TV again.
Yeah. I mean... Abby, any other bits? I mean, you know, I want you to have more of a voice, because you did pick it.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of the places that had... particularly nice bit. Like Jamie said, it's all about the little sprinklings throughout that really give it its character and its sparkle. Mm. It's not so much the overall plot. Mm. But I think it is just... In a way, I think it would be better as a play than a film.
Mm.
Because
you're
willing to suspend your belief, your disbelief, differently in a play than you are a film.
You go to a play going, what are you going to give me to feed on to intellectually? Whereas a film, you're expecting it to entertain you, and you go, Peter Sellers or comedy then, isn't it? I'll have a laugh.
I think... This is the first Hal Ashby film I've ever seen. And I've heard of like Harold and Maude over and over again forever and still have never seen even a trailer for it. So I don't know how much in his usual kind of style this is.
It's certainly the sense of humour from... We've seen Harold and Maude, and it is good, but it's, again, weird. Like
this,
that's another conversation for another time.
Yeah, but there seems very specific.
There's an odd, mawkish sense of humour, kind of odd, like, people
comedy.
He likes comedy.
Misfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As well. I've only seen this, Harold and Maude, in the last detail. And he's very much about... the people who are unusual in whatever situation they're in.
So, here's a thing I've remembered that's a key to underlining the fact that this guy is not the Messiah and that they can't make that. Is the Black Maid has another insert in the film. They cut to her in like a hotel or where, her apartment or somewhere.
I think it's a nursing home like that. I don't know, actually. No, you're wrong. You're probably... Yeah, no, it's probably...
No, I'm wrong, because you've said... What are you on about?
No, sorry, I meant I'm probably wrong.
Accuse me of being wrong, because you interrupt me.
I didn't even think about it when I was watching it. But yeah, no, it's
somewhere.
Probably an apartment building, yeah.
They're watching TV with a bunch of people. She's not alone. She has other people living with her, and it looks slightly... Yeah. Like, slightly poor, because it's contrasting with this massive mansion. And it's just as he's on TV... being interviewed as if he's a presidential advisor, because that's one of the areas. Is that even the TV industry, they don't do enough research and they sit someone down because they want the latest story, so it doesn't matter. And like she sees the TV and she starts like shouting and cursing because he's like she knows him. She's the only person who knows him, and he's an idiot simpleton. And she like I can't remember what's the phrase she uses. She like calls him like
America's like.
A head full of pudding, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rice pudding. It's specifically rice pudding.
well remembered, Gabby.
But I like... Yeah, I like. Do you know what? That was probably the most realistic scene in the film, where she saw him on TV and went, "The fuck's he doing there?"
Yeah,
like, that guy's an idiot. He can't tie his own shoelaces. That might help. I cooked him every meal, and oh yeah, white America makes him Mr. Important on TV. Yeah. She assumes it's because of some kind of white problem, whereas in fact it's just because everyone's an idiot.
Yeah.
But that is the moment where you go, yeah, see, someone, it isn't that he's special, he's like some kind of simple messiah figure giving him sage advice. He's actually not, unintentionally
even
interacting
then,
with everyone.
Even then, she's projecting on him as well, because he didn't really get there because he was white, but yeah, she's also projecting on him, so everyone does it.
Yeah.
She is right, though. Like, he is an idiot, and, like, her reaction is correct.
Yes.
It's like, what the hell is this?
She's the only one, along with all us watching, who are in on the joke. Yeah. And I like they put that in there, because that's... I'm on board with it to some extent, but I did just have these things. It makes you think a lot, and that's a good thing from a film. It had my brain ticking over on the messages it had to say, on the comedy, and also on, you know, some of the filmic devices. I had me thinking a lot, and that's really good. So, you know, I am hesitant to say I did really like it, but I did really like it. So, you know, there's that. Okay. I am talked round, but I had my say, and I feel good for it. We don't really need to cover any other parts of the film. There's plenty more we've missed out, right, guys? People aren't spoiled to death by it, or have remembered it now and have gone, oh yeah, I thought I saw that a while ago, it is worth checking out.
I'm glad. I know he did like one more film after this, but it's one that like nobody really cared about. So this is like basically his last kind of Peter Sellers' last big film before he died. Mm. And I'm kind of glad after the career he had that this was the final like big film he did, because it was something he'd been trying to get made for like 20 years or 10 years or something. So it was obviously personal to him, and it said something about him as a, like, the idea that people had of him as a character actor who plays someone different every time, and, you know, he's funny and everything. And then the last film he's in, he's just a blank slate for people to project on.
It's a comment about his whole career, in a sense. Yeah. You could, and then you don't have to take that away from it. If you're not in the know about Peter Sellers, it works. But it's another string to his already very stringed viola. Yeah. Like, he's added another string to his bow, and it's just well done. You can do this other kind of comedy where you're the straight man, and everyone else is like accidentally being the comic side of it. I think it's
got a lot of depth, and it's a fascinating film, but it is quite difficult in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what was weird? We can't gloss over this. When he gets injured, he's put in a wheelchair and lifted into the mansion for the first time backwards, and he's content and he's experiencing the world afresh. And he's been watching in the limousine, like, kind of ignoring the woman who's yammering on, and he's reacting to a weird animation of a of like a Cheech and Chong thing. Like, it's an animation from a Cheech and Chong song or something, with weird black characters who are very caricatured with big lips and big hats, and it's just this weird Basketball Jones thing.
Like, go back and watch it and find out the name of the song. I bet you could probably find that little cartoon.
There is an animation.
Yeah.
Little tidbit. It did play before The Last Detail, Abby. I know you like that film, and it is one of his. So it played as a short, Basketball Jones.
Oh.
The whole, like, some basketball character has a really surreal, weird animation, and there's some music in it, and the song is like Basketball Jones, and it's like he's some kid called Shoelaces or something. It's really weird, but it played before The Last Detail.
I mean, the 70s were pretty racist, still. So.
But the music contrasts with this, like, he's in this millionaire house, and he's happy and being wheeled in, and it's just got Basketball Jones, Basketball Jones. It's just like, what is going on? Very funny. Had to mention it. It's just so odd. Back to wrapping up the podcast, all right, guys?
Mm.
I like the film. I have my reservations. I've said them. I don't know if we should pick a garden as a metaphor. Maybe we should come up with a gardening metaphor, as he came up with his own. The seasons. Yeah. When the seasons change, this film changes, and we must sit through the bad parts of the film for the summer parts of the film where all the little flowers bud. And like, is that going to work as a metaphor? His let's use his actual metaphor for the seasons changing in the garden. The seasons have to change. And as with this film, we go through the winter of the film for the summer of the film of the good bits. Can we just, you know, can we agree to that? Or...
Yeah, that'll do.
Abby?
It took you so long to get it out that yes.
Yeah, sure.
So if you want to know our metaphorical rating of the film, it is Peter Sellers' garden speech. Just take the meaning out of it and interpret it appropriately for how we feel, which we've just talked about. So we all like it. Make of it what you will. We had problems, blah, blah, blah. That is our rating. It is the metaphor from the film. So, you know, any last thoughts from you guys?
No.
No, I think we have pretty thoroughly covered everything I had to say about it.
Yeah, you know, so last chance to think of any quote you wanna say, and we'll just say goodbye then. So we're going with...
Bye!
Bye!
Bye. Basketball Jones! Today's Basketball Jones! All those weird white people cartoons that were just singing the song.
Yeah,
so, right, that's what we're doing. Gonna Google that song, Basketball Jones, and watch the weird Cheech and Chong thing.
Yeah,
I recommend you do too.
All that kind of like 70s like cartoons like that. It reminded me very much of Ralph Bakshi, the guy who did Fritz the Cat.
Yeah, it kind of slightly pervy.
Yeah,
I wonder if
he had anything to do with it actually, because it looked very much like his style.
And we will put a dot 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 as we go and wonder.
Oh, I didn't realize this was going to be in it.
No, this is me trying to actually end. So,
oh,
bye.